This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
Well, hey guys, how you doing? Really, really glad you are here. Got an amazing interview today. Super, super excited to have Mike on the show. And we're going to talk about Mike and his story in just a little bit here. But let me just give you a little bit of backstory. You know, I met Mike, God, it's got to be over a year or so ago now, like right?
Year and a half, November 2013.
Yeah, it was, man. And so we were at an event called Awesomeness Fest, where I was a speaker at that event. And my first time being there, Vishen Lakhani, who puts on that event, actually had just spoken at Internet Profits Live, which is the event that I do. So he had kind of done a little quid pro quo for me and provided a speaking slot. But I was in a really shit place. I was like the only person at Awesomeness Fest like not having an awesome time. So it was like, you know, it was a really
I was too, Steve. I will admit that too.
Really?
Yeah, maybe we can talk about it. I don't want to break your story, but like by the end of it, like I couldn't take that much awesomeness. I was kind of angry, and I was actually with a friend. I was like, man, why are these people so fucking happy? So I just want to share that's a piece of my story too.
All right, sweet.
It was like too much love for me at the time. But right? Go ahead, back to the story.
And you're like one of the most loving guys I know. So that's so funny. So you know, just basically, long story short, I met a lot of really interesting people. Just some really cool folk, and Mike, you know, Mike was definitely one of them. So I'm just really excited to bring Mike on today. So let me give you Mike's official bio. So Mike Rostosky is his actual full name here. He's known as the men's coach. And really what he does is he helps high-performing men master their relationships with their women and their work. And he's on a mission to make the world a better place, one man at a time. And knowing Mike personally, I mean, that is so true. Mike's really, I mean, he's been doing this now, and he's helped hundreds of men from the ages of 20 to 60 reconnect with their heart, their balls, and their voice to create powerful lifestyles filled with freedom and adventure. And his work has been called more impactful than years of therapy. He's known for living a life without secrets, openly sharing his fears, his challenges, and breakthroughs online for the world to see. Someone always has to go first, and he's not afraid to be that man. And one of the things that I love that you say is that, you know, truth be told, you're just making this stuff up as you go along. And it's just so true, man. I mean, you're just one of the most transparent guys that I've ever met. Or not even, I guess maybe in a better word, is authentic, right? I mean, transparency is a byproduct of being authentic. But let's go back to that Awesomeness Fest thing, because I mean, for me, I mean, literally when I came back from Awesomeness Fest, I mean, I hit about as low as I could go. I mean, I was literally crawling out of my skin, like put me in a room somewhere, lock me up, you know, because I was so far gone. I mean, it was like a perfect storm in so many different ways. But it's really interesting, because you're saying you were kind of in the same place. And frankly, I would never have guessed that. So what was your experience like there?
Yeah. It was amazing. I mean, all the speakers, and it was like mind blowing information and just like really heart opening, all the people there. And I think I hit like an upper limit. I love the book, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, where he kind of talks about these like upper limits that we hit, either with our income or how much love we can take. And I hit an upper limit. I was super happy and full for the whole week, but by the like closing party, I just sort of hit like an upper limit, and instead of just, you know, it was just like too much for my little heart to take. And then by the end of it, I was really good throughout the week, but at the closing party, I was just kind of a hater. just something. It's like I went back to being that like angry middle school, or like that angry teenager who just was like, you know, like I was that guy in the bar when I was in my early 20s who were just like hating on people, like, oh, like why is this guy, this is the fucking douchebag, and his girlfriend, like he's probably rich, or like, you know, just I was just sort of a hater because I didn't love myself at all. And that something got triggered where I actually I found one other friend who was sort of not having the best time there, and we just sat there like on this bench and looked at people and like made fun of people, and
right,
and that's what I had to do to have a good time, and I was okay with it, and we were just sort of laughing. We're like, yeah, like I've just had it up to here with like all this love and abundance and shit.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. So talk to me about this, because this is one of the challenges that I've had. I mean, look, I'm not one of those rosy glowy people. I've just never been, mm-hmm. you know, I've never had a huge circle of friends. I've always had just a couple of very close friends. You know, I've never been, you know, like one of those guys that walks into a party and I'm just like, you know, yay, I'm glad I'm here. I mean, I always would go to the party, but mostly I would be like, I DJ'd, right? So I DJ'd for a number of years, so I could be at the party, but not really be in the party, yeah. you know, so to speak. And so, you know, part of what I find to be both confusing and concerning, I think, at the same time, is I don't understand sort of where the line of authenticity and inauthenticity sort of crosses, mm-hmm. right? Because when do you get to be, you know, so authentic that you actually come full circle and now you're inauthentic about your authenticity? You know what I'm saying? It's like, and that was kind of the vibe that I was getting. It's like, you know, maybe my life has just been too fucked or whatever, but, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, I can't blow sunshine out of my ass all the time, you know? And so it was just sort of like, I was just getting that same sort of vibe that you were talking about, except I went in from day one with that. So, you know, I mean, how do you kind of reconcile the being so authentic that you were actually inauthentic, you know, kind of conundrum?
Yeah. So I felt a little bit of the same way too, because I felt like some of these people were being fake, but really the reason why, I mean, they were just being sort of a mirror for me and my own like internal what's going on inside. So my internal, like, you know, my truth was that, man, there's no way that people can be this happy all the time, because I was not this happy all the time, because I, you know, still had a lot of like, just even at that point, after doing a lot of coaching work, like I still had some demons and shadows, and, you know, I mean, and I'm still doing my work, like with a coach, and almost like, you know, digging for gold, you know, just kind of like digging into doing that deep, like emotional, spiritual work. So really, I mean, it was a level of, that was at the point, like the most awesome group of people that I had ever been around. Like, I mean, that was in year one of my business, and I was just like a coach doing one-on-one stuff. And there were a lot of people in the room who I had either bought their products or listened to their podcasts, people who I really admired. And there's even a level of like, holy shit, I'm in the room with like this guy and that guy. And, you know, founders of startups. And so for me, in at that time, and I love that we're talking about this, because I can even see like how far I've come from there. But at the time, I think there were parts of me that just felt like I didn't belong, or I wasn't good enough to be in that room. And that, you know, oh man, this is like a waste of money, because I'm not good enough yet to like be in this room, which I know now is just bullshit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't feel good enough, and I didn't believe that people could be like that happy and that loving all the time. But as I look back, and as I've gotten to know some of those people on a deeper level, like they've just been just on the path a little longer, and they've and everyone has their shit. I mean, everyone has just some of the most amazing people who I've met, people who I really admire. And when you see them, they're just these like bundles of joy, and they tell their backstory. It just blows me away. And I think a lot of the most amazing like coaches and speakers and entrepreneurs that I know came from a really messed up childhood. I mean, crazy stuff around just like violence or sexual abuse or like death of a parent when they're young, or like near death experiences. And it's because of that, that post-traumatic growth, that they are just so full and just they're alive. But yeah, dude, I was by the closing party, I was right there with you, because I just couldn't be in such an abundant environment. And it was like a stretch for me. It was just hitting all my upper limits for wealth and for love and for just like living life that, you know, that boldly out loud.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So to kind of take us back through it. So you actually were in the corporate world, mm-hmm. And you had done, I mean, look, by all measures, you had been doing pretty damn good. Did you mm-hmm. just up and quit, man, and just say, I can't do it anymore? What did that sound like? And then how did you get into this work as the men's coach?
Yeah. So all of my life I've been driven by, I've been driven by achievement for like the first 30 years of my life. I was valedictorian, a National Merit Scholarship, SOT scholar, and I was president of everything. I really got into leadership. I was president of my MBA class. But like, as I look back, it was driven because like, I didn't feel like that I was enough. Like I didn't feel I was good enough. So it was this like insatiable drive to be number one, to beat everybody else, to like be special, to be in the spotlight. And it worked, and then I achieved, right, like, you know, a lot of cool stuff, and I won competitions and did things, but like in my heart, like in my core, like I really didn't love myself, and I didn't think I was that great. And even very recently have I made the shift into being able to say like, I'm a good man. Like that's something that has been new probably in the past year. So I was this achievement oriented, have to be number one kind of guy. But then the rest of my life was out of control. Like I've had two alcohol related arrests, one like a DUI and a public intoxication ticket in Des Moines, Iowa, like 2 years ago. And I cheated on most of my girlfriends like in my 20s, and just, I mean, really, really, really out of integrity and just in so many ways. And just kind of like on paper, amazing. But if you saw the, like, if I like sort of open the kimono and share, like, here's what's actually going on in my life and my relationships and my friendships, it'd be like, wow, Mike, I'm so sorry to hear that. Mm-hmm. So I just had this huge double life, which started very young, because I was raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, like a real strict Christian religion. So I started lying to my parents from a really, really young age, because I had to, because I needed their love to survive, because I was a kid. And so I started lying, just in the small lies of even lying with like the kids that I was playing with at school, because I was really only supposed to hang out with other Jehovah's Witness kids. And so the small lies turned into, you know, bigger lies and the bigger lies and the bigger lies. And then I was pretty much like a pathological liar in my teens and early 20s. And my road to recovery and my road into being just, God, so much more fulfilled and in every area of my life just came around just telling the truth and being in integrity with myself and with everyone else around me.
How much of that was tied to the death of your mom, though? Because I know that that was, you know, was that the turning point?
Yeah. So right then, so June 4th, 2011, not even 4 years ago, I went to World Domination Summit, which was Chris Guillebeau's conference. I just went to it on a whim, because I read his blog and I really respected the guy, and he was living this life that I didn't even know was humanly possible. I just saw him as some kind of superhero. And I went to the conference, and just, it was like taking the red pill in the Matrix and seeing just, holy shit, like you can live this kind of life. And I just kind of met all these people that were,
what was that kind of life though? I mean, like what was so different? Like what did you admire about what Chris was doing that was just so foreign to how you were living?
Yeah. So Chris was like running this business from all over the world, and he was on this journey to visit every country in the world before his 35th birthday. And then I met all the people at this conference who are, you know, running these internet businesses, some of them, you know, they're making.
Some of them are making trains right now.
Yeah. There's the train in our neighborhood.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, some of them were making thousands, I mean, even like tens of thousands of dollars a month selling information online. Like I didn't know that was possible. It just, what the fuck? And they were so generous with their time and their knowledge. And a lot of them became friends and mentors and just invited me to different, you know, entrepreneurship gatherings or retreats. streets and just like lovingly sucked me in to this like bigger, bolder, more amazing life. So that was like the most, probably like one of the most amazing events that I had ever been to. And the night before, my mom passed away in her sleep, unexpectedly. So it was just, it's like the, it's funny that a train just went by. It's like the train just came off the tracks. Everything in my life shifted. That was my first death that I had ever experienced. I mean, I was pretty lucky that I made it to 30 without really experiencing like a heavy death. I know, you know, now that I've been doing this work, there's people whose parents died when they were two or three. So that was my first death, and it really like shook me to my core, and it made me reevaluate how I was living. And from that point on,
right before WDS.
Yeah.
So wow, what timing.
So it was just like rebirth. And from then I could only last like 6 months more in an office in a corporate job, left my company at the end of 2011, sold everything that I own like February 2012. So I became a nomad and just started doing stuff that makes me happy. So I drove around the country for 3 months with my brother in the summer, in between his freshman and sophomore year of college. And we did this thing called A Summer to Serve, where we just did volunteer work in like 35 different cities, and we blogged about it. And it was just like, I mean, I don't think I've ever been happier, just traveling, being with my brother, doing volunteer work, met even more amazing people, decided to do life coach training, and just really organically, I mean, I had no plan, and I still have no plan. I'm totally making it up, just like every other like New York Times bestseller and, you know, like millionaire entrepreneur that I know. Like we're all just truly making it up and using our intuition and being comfortable in this place of uncertainty and just doing whatever we think is right for ourselves and for the world. And it just kind of turned into this coaching business. And then it turned into a coaching business for men, because as I traveled all over the world, I saw these common pain points of just men suffering in isolation because they didn't believe that they were allowed to ask for help, because, you know, someone told them that real men don't ask for help, and they were all blocked up emotionally because when they were young, they learned that like big boys don't cry, and they saw all other men as competition instead of their brothers. And they're just, you know, some of them on paper had good lives, but, you know, really weren't feeling that fulfilled. And and what's also wild is just one last thing I'll add was that, I mean, some of these guys that I met were, I mean, really like incredible guys, you know, speakers, authors, entrepreneurs. And something that happened to them is, you know, they got into the work and they grew so much in maybe 6 months or a year, and then they grew past all their friends, and then they were lonely, and they really had no one else like on the path with them. So I feel so lucky today that, I mean, at least 100 guys, and I could sit down with a notebook and probably write like 100 names of just badass bros who have huge hearts, really live in integrity. They're doing big work in the world. And I mean, a lot of them, at least a dozen of them, like I get off the phone and I say, I love you. And like, they're truly like my brothers. And I mean, I never thought this was possible as a man. I didn't know I could be like this loving to other men and to have this much support in my life. But it's like, it's true. Like I can have it, but it just had to do with me, basically opening up, like healing all my stuff from my childhood and, letting go of any limiting beliefs that like don't serve me or that make me feel like shit. And, I'm still constantly evolving and, you know, getting coaching and going to, you know, different conferences and events. Cause like I will never have it all figured out. But you know, like I'm still gonna continue to learn and grow, because it's like, why not? You know, we had this, I mean, I've already won at life, like just like you have, Steve, and everyone listening to this, like just by being born. I mean, the chances to be even born and like experiencing life is you know, it's, gosh, it's like in the trillions or something with all the sperm. So, you know, you're alive, you've already won at life. So like, why not, you know, make the most of this like sort of epic, like cosmic video game that we're living, and try and have as much like pleasure and fulfillment while still having tons of contribution and impact. And, you know, it's like, why not? That's a question that I ask a lot to, you know, to clients or even to myself. It's like, you know, like, why not? I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to be rich, and I'm going to be like just full of people that I love, and I'm going to experience stuff and travel, because it's a choice and it takes a lot of hard work to get there, but I'm willing to do the work because it just makes me a better person. So.
Yeah, man, 100%. And I, you know, appreciate the perspective, appreciate the backstory, because it really helps me. It helps, you know, everyone here to understand, you know, exactly where you're coming from and where you've been. And, you know, one of the main questions that I have for you is, you know, when I look at sort of the relationship between men and women historically, you know, there's always been sort of this unwritten, maybe it's in the DNA, I don't know, but it's like this superior mentality of men have a certain role and women have a certain role that is, for lack of a better term here, subordinate. You know, and I know you do a lot of work with men and their relationships with their women. What's the first thing that you find that you want to ask somebody, you know, in terms of their relationship, when someone is having a problem with their relationships, is it typically because of that subordinate mentality, or is there something else usually that's going on in terms of what you found?
So one of the first questions that I ask men, do you love women? And then I'll ask, you know, do you trust women? And for a lot of guys, those answers are no. And they kind of, you know, and they have valid, you know, and in their experience of life on this planet, you know, it's maybe because their mom left their family, or, you know, their mom had an affair, or their mom died, or one of their girlfriends cheated on them, or, you know, just their mom was really verbally abusive, or maybe there's some sexual abuse, you know, so there's reasons, you know, things happen in our lives where we create these associations. And, you know, there's a good amount of men out there who just don't love women. And, I don't think I really loved women, the way that I do now, the way that I just have this like admiration and appreciation that it just comes from like the deepest parts of my body. I've never shared this story, but this is, when I was like in my early 20s, I broke up with a girlfriend. I think I was 22 or 23. We broke up because I was cheating on her. So I was cheating on her, but I was just like in such a bad space. I actually, this is kind of scary for me to share, even though I share everything on my blog. But so I made this like mix CD that had like a hard, like a heavy metal, and then like a rap song. It was like heavy metal rap. Mm. And it was the most like misogynistic, like hateful, just like music. And it was like, fuck bitches, get money kind of stuff. And on the CD, it said, I hate bitches. Like that was the actual, like the name in black Sharpie. And like, I would listen to that nonstop. Like, so that's the kind of, I mean, dark place that I was in around women. And I've since healed that, and I love women, but you know, I mean, just 10 years ago, I had a mix CD that said, I hate bitches, that I listened to nonstop because I was in such a place of just not knowing what the hell I was doing with women. And I grew up with a lot of religion, and you know, the first story that anyone who grew up in a religious background, the first story that's ever been told about women is Adam and Eve. And you know, Eve, you know, supposedly like tempted Adam with the apple. And so in that moment, right, you know, depending on whatever your belief system is, and I honor all of them, but if you believe in like the, you know, in the Bible and the Judeo-Christian model, so the very first story in the Bible is that, you know, Adam, instead of owning his shit and being, you know what, God, I ate the apple.
Right. That bitch made me do it.
Yeah. So he blamed Eve and that just has cascaded throughout, I mean, just mankind's history with, you know, sort of taking the feminine part of God out and, you know, having God only be the masculine and not letting, you know, women serve in, you know, different roles in religion and basically putting them into this like second class citizen space.
When you go back to your, you know, to your mixtape, your CD,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, reality is that, I mean, look, that's, you know, men are wired to, as you said, we're wired to view one another as a competitor.
Yes.
I mean, we're wired to want to win, to want to acquire, right? And so women have historically just been another possession. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's that mentality of, I'm going to get the girl before you get her. And then when I'm done with her, you know, you can have my sloppy seconds, you know, or whatever it might be. Or, you know, I've been with this girl for, you know, however long, and now I want to trade her in for the newer, hotter model, right? I mean, it's that whole mentality of it's, you know, it's a possession, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just something that we can brag about. Now, in your work, I know that you help people, you know, men get over that, but you know, look, you can't look back and say, you know, geez, I don't know where those, you know, why I was thinking that way. Well, you were thinking that way because it's, I mean, it's everywhere, you know. I mean, in terms of like the MTV generation, you look at the videos, you look at the rap music, you know, you look at, you know, even the R&B, whatever. I mean, it's all, you know, about, you know, how I'm gonna lay you down, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, you know, and yeah. You know, head down, ass up, right? And so, you know, it's like a depository, and so. You know, reality is that it's just, it has become commonplace. And so in your, I mean, I admire the work that you're doing because obviously you're trying to break that cycle. You're trying to, you know, really show men that you can have your power, you can have your brilliance, you can have everything and still love women and treat them in a way that is, you know, frankly, far superior to how most men have viewed women for millennia. So what's the one thing you think we need to do from a societal standpoint to break that pattern? And I'm going to let you hold that thought. And when we come right back, I'm going to have Mike that, you know, answer that question about what's the one thing that Mike thinks we need to do here to really break that pattern. We'll be right back with more Reinvention Radio right after this.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What Is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
All right, welcome back. So glad you guys are here. You're just joining us, which I don't know how that would be since this is the podcast. but if you're just coming back, we're talking to Mike Rostosky. And Mike is known as the men's coach. And really love Mike and the work that he's doing for sure. And he's just a really, like, man, when I grow up, I want to be like Mike kind of guy. so, you know, reality is, we were talking just before the break here about the role that men and women play and just sort of our I don't want to say that our innate nature, but it's certainly wired to some extent within most men to see women as possessions, to see women as, you know, just sort of temporary objects of desire. And then, you know, we're going to trade you in for the new model kind of thing. But what do you think? What's the one thing that you think we can do to kind of break that mental way of being, that stereotype, that societal expectation that men put on other men?
Yeah, there's so many. So I'm just going to say this, because this has been just like one of the most profound truths that I've heard in the past month. And I went to like a Jesse Elder event, who's just this really amazing coach. And one of the, I might actually work with him. He's just fucking badass. And
yeah, Jesse's been on the show. He's great.
Yeah. And he said something. He said, "The greatest freedom is the freedom to allow others to have their own experience." And when he said that, it's like the whole, just like the whole audience, like, like took an exhale at the same time. And yeah, just truly the greatest freedom is the freedom to allow everyone to have their own religious beliefs, like their own ideas of like how to run business. And you know, who am I to judge someone for anything that he or she does in their life? And, you know, the only thing that I should really focus is on myself and how I want to show up and how I want to live life. So that, like, instead of blaming and judging, judging that energy of like judging other people, which I did for most of my life, and I still do sometimes. I'm not this like Buddha, like walking around. you know, I still judge people, but now when those judgments come up, I get to question them and bring a process of inquiry and say, wow, like why am I judging that guy? You know, like what is it about him that is making me like feel bad right now? So, I mean, he's not doing anything to me, just it's his being out in the world. What is it that he's doing that's like making me feel bad right now? And most of the time it's just because like I don't think I'm like good enough or rich enough or like my dick's big enough or I'm like, you know, just like whatever, all those insecurities that men have. But yeah, just really allowing others to live their own life. It's amazing in parenting and relationships with our parents and with our partners, like with my partner Liz. Like, I mean, she can do whatever she wants in life within the agreements of our relationship. So, I mean, we're in a monogamous relationship. And I mean, I have friends who are in, you know, open relationships and, you know, they practice, you know, polyamorous relationships. Like, that's awesome for them. Like, they're, you know, we're all on these different journeys and they're all paths to the same place. But you know, for us, that's the choice that we made. And our agreements are, you know, like no kissing other people and no sexual touch.
Yeah.
And
by the way, in terms of the sort of the polyamory thing, do you know anybody that's a swinger that is actually happy? Like that is in a relationship that has made that thing work? Because I've known swingers, you know, mm-hmm. for decades, mm-hmm. and there is not one couple that I know that embraces that lifestyle that actually has a happy marriage or actually has stayed with that person beyond, you know, whatever that specific expiration date is that they put on this thing. But do you know people that it works for?
Yeah. I know people that it works for. And like, when I even first heard the idea of it, it was less than 3 years ago. It was at South by Southwest 2012. And one of my friends asked me, you know, could you ever be in an open relationship? And when she said that, like my heart like dropped to my stomach and I felt these like waves of nausea come on. And I just thought like, oh, like no way. Like that's disgusting. There's no way, like just fuck other people. But since then I've, you know, I do a lot of work around sexuality. So I've met a lot of like really interesting people and I feel so grateful for hanging around with a lot of the like poly tantra community. Cause, the way that they do relationship is it's fully transparent. I mean, there's no secrets at all. Just even the most shadowy type stuff, fully transparent. And they have really clear cut agreements, you know, and just,
but
and
at some point you fall in love. I mean, mm-hmm. it's inevitable. At some point you fall in love. I mean, if you have this open relationship and you're with the same woman, mm-hmm. you know, outside of your marriage, mm-hmm. you know, on a consistent basis, it's kind of hard to not connect that the physical act with the emotional side of the equation. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I guess from my standpoint, the, you know, again, I'm not trying to be judgmental. I mean, that's not the point. I'm just trying to understand, like, can you, because obviously in your work with men, do you think it's possible to love two women equally and to then have that sort of polyamorous relationship where you give an equal amount of yourself to more than one woman?
I'm just gonna say, like, I believe anything's possible. So, if we look at a spectrum, like the colors of a rainbow from like red to violet, there's a spectrum from light to dark, and there's a spectrum from like straight up monogamous. Like, you are not allowed to even talk to another man, which is how some guys treat their wives, to full on open. It's like, you don't even have to ask me. You can do whatever you want. And there's like, there's millions of permutations and combinations in the middle. And I think my message is like, it's all good. But the most important thing is that, so for the men listening, the most important thing is that relationship between you and your woman, or you and your man, right? So the most important thing is that relationship and your truth between the two of you, and what you two together as a partnership, as a team, how you want to explore life together. Like, one of my friends who's in an open marriage, one of his mentors said that, you know, the way that he described it said, you know, if you were, say, like fucking another woman and your wife came in, there shouldn't be a skip. Like, the record shouldn't skip at all. There should be so much communication. You know, it's like probably hours of communication even before that happened. So, I think there's a lot of like myths or just ideas of what it is, which I totally had. But you know, since meeting really amazing couples who do it so well, I'm thankful. And I know like Liz is thankful, because we have, even though we're in a monogamous relationship, we have this like level of depth, and there's things that I've shared with her about it just got so deep so quick of like, yeah, here's how many women I've slept with, and here's like the women that I cheated on, and here's my deepest fears, and you know, like, these are my sexual desires towards other women, and just like, I'm able to have that conversation. And I think being able to have that conversation and to still be loved and accepted has healed so much. I mean, God, like when we first started dating, just I felt like every other day there's like a moment where I was just crying, because like I shared something that I thought made me totally unlovable and like a piece of shit. And she said, "Yeah, cool. You're human. Right. You're a human being."
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you, man. So, you know, look, obviously we could go in a million different directions
totally.
With this. But one of the things that I really want to get clear on here, at mm-hmm. least, you know, even from my own edification, and of mm-hmm. course for the men that are listening and the women that want to understand their men better, but what is the one thing, if there is one thing, that you really feel like men need to let go of in order to have a more real, authentic, fruitful relationship with the woman that they love?
Oh man, there's so much, but one that's coming up for me right now, and I've been talking to a lot of people about this idea, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so true, is that I think men, sometimes we put women into two camps. There's like the good girls, the women that we would marry. And then there's like sluts, just like the girls that we want to fuck and like don't give a shit about. And that's a just dangerous. And I think that like happens sometime when we're even in high school, and there's girls that are labeled as sluts. Like I don't even believe in the word anymore. And I will only date sluts for the rest of my life, because I think like that label that people call sluts is just like a sexually empowered woman. And if I'm gonna be with a woman, like I want her to like love fucking and like love my cock and like love everything about sex and be comfortable around it. So what's dangerous about that of lumping the good girls and sluts is that, you know, a guy in college will just like fuck all these girls and be like, oh, you know, they mean nothing. Like they're just sluts. And then they'll marry the girl who's like president of her sorority and, you know, like whatever. And they'll marry this like quote unquote good girl, but then they won't fuck her like they would fuck a quote unquote slut. So this woman, the one that they want to marry, they give her some like really like vanilla type sex when she just like, she wants to be fucked like every other woman does. And there's no wonder why 50 Shades of Grey is this like worldwide phenomenon, because there's a lot of women, and I talk to a lot of women in my work, there's a lot of women who just like aren't being fucked and like not being taken, and their men aren't bringing that sort of like dark masculine energy, which is really sexy. And the fact that I can even have this conversation blows my mind, because I mean, 2 years ago, I had so much shame around sex, and I had 0% darkness in me. Like I just saw women as these like beautiful little flowers that I wanted to like hold in the palm of my hand and protect. But the more that I've talked to like really openly to women about sex, they're like, yeah, like we want to be just fucked. I mean, with love, but we want to be taken, and you can, you know, pull my hair and choke me like with complete like love and presence. But, yeah, the whole good girls and sluts thing. So if you take those two concentric circles and then put them into one, and if you see every woman as all, like all women are, they are good and they're beautiful, but like they also have a piece in them that like loves sex. I mean, it's because we're humans and sex is just a part of being a human being. So, you know, to the man who's listening to this, who might be in a relationship, like with your wife and your, you know, it's like you don't want to do anything because it's like dirty or degrading. Like there's a piece of your fuck that you're holding back. And there's, you know, there's more connection that you can have through sex, more openness, more energy that you can create, you know, through your sexual practice with
your partner.
So let's
take this into real terms then. So like a guy like me who's been married 17 years, and you know, I'd like to consider the sex life that we have as being good. Mm-hmm. But you know, the idea of choking her and pulling her hair and that sort of things, you know, I mean, I think she might like that.
Yeah.
But how would a guy like me who hasn't mm-hmm. choked her and uh-huh. pulled her hair and, uh-huh. you know, and wanted her to come while she's dying, basically, you know, I mean, how do I introduce this into the relationship? What does that conversation sound like?
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say I really honor the both of us, because even me, like, this is kind of a scary conversation for me to have out loud, because we never talk about this. So I just want to honor you, Steve, for even, you know, we're going deeper into this. So just yay. So you said the word conversation, and I think it really starts with conversation. So, I mean, it's not like surprising with just, you know, one day just, you know, you'd like choke him or punch him in the face or something. I mean, that's probably not the best approach, but it's just having, you know, for me, the deepest levels of intimacy, which, you know, you can think of the word intimacy as like into me, you see, it's just talking about it. Like, hey, babe, you know, I had this conversation with this crazy Mike guy, and he was just talking about like all the dirty 50 Shades of Grey sex. You know, it's like, I don't know, how do you like, do you want any of that stuff? Or, you know, are there types of energies that like you would want to like bring into our sexual practice? Or just, I think being just talking about it. I mean, I've the stuff that Liz and I talk about, I did not know it was possible. Like I didn't know that a man and a woman in a partnership could talk about the things. Like I didn't think it was allowed.
Well, you guys are two very, very special people. I mean, I know Liz, and she's mm-hmm. an amazing woman, and I know you, you're an amazing man. You know, and frankly, you know, there are a lot of couples out there who will never reached the level of intimacy that you guys have been able to reach really from the get-go, because you set that boundary, you know, you set that line of communication up so early. Mm-hmm. What I think is scary to a lot of people, and again, using myself as an example here, is, you know, if we've been driving a Ford Pinto for, you know, for 17 years, and now all of a sudden I'm like, hey, you know, it's time to get in the Tesla, then the conversation is like, whoa, you know, what's going on here? You know, you're not the man I married. You're not the man I've been fucking for the last 17 years, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, I don't know if I can be with you anymore. I mean, that's like, you know, so we play all these things out in our mind in terms of like, God, this is, you know, this is just going to be hell on, I mean, it's just, where is this going to go? So, you know, from my perspective, and for the men out there who have yet to, you know, really get to the point of having the sort of intimacy and open dialogue that you and Liz have, mm-hmm. how do you sort of ease into that? Like, where do you start?
Yeah, so I think it's like creating this like container of safety and the intention of why. So, you know, like if I was in, it's been so long, but like I forgot that for most of my life I was in these relationships where I didn't talk about shit. I mean, my default response to anything that my girlfriends would say was, you know, I don't know. I would just shrug my shoulders, say, I don't know, and kind of like sink into the sofa. And just go, and try and like weasel my way out of having any like real conversation about anything. So I get it. It's scary. It's probably the, like, telling the truth is probably the scariest thing, like one of the scariest things that I've ever done, because there's the fear of losing love, and there's the fear of like, am I going to lose everything that I've worked so hard to create? Whether, I mean, you know, a 17 year marriage, or, you know, like having children, or, you know, for me, I was in these like 4 year, 3 year long relationships, and I was like, you know, there's a lot sort of at risk. So I think setting, like creating the safety of, when I think back to like that mic, maybe 10 years ago or, you know, 5 years ago, I'd probably say something like, you know, hey, you know, babe, like I love you and I'm totally committed to our relationship. But there's just things that like, I want to deepen between us. Like, I want to be a better man and deepen. And like, you know, I've been hearing these podcasts and these, you know, these guys that I hear about, and like I kind of want us to have that. And like, I'm just being honest. Right. So whatever.
So basically just say, look, I've been hanging out in Mike and Liz's closet. They don't know I'm there, but I'm just watching and learning. And yeah, no, I got you though.
Yeah. Sharing like what's in your heart. So sharing just fears. I mean, God, I'm afraid all the time. So just sharing, you know what, like, I'm really afraid. Like, I'm afraid that like, I won't be like good enough, or I'm afraid that like, I won't be able to step up into this, or like, I'm afraid I'm going to fuck something up, or like, I'm afraid to have these conversations, or, you know, it's like, I saw how my mom and dad did marriage and I don't want to do that. And I'm afraid of like, not getting to experience life, or, you know, just whatever those fears are. But it's like, I want this to be fucking awesome. And like, you know, I want you to be proud of me as a man. And I just like, you know, like, cause I know that's possible for me as a human being, cause I've met these other humans who went from totally like shitty and out of integrity and shut down to like having a, you know, really fulfilling relationship. And so I know it's possible for me as a human being. And, you know, it's like, are you with me? Or, And then just sort of opening the floor for her, you know, like what's coming up for you? What's, you know, like what's present? And, and it's that just coming from that space of, you know, really wanting, it's like really wanting the best for the relationship and for her and for yourself. And I'll add, like, I'm very selfish. And I think that's a good thing. So the more that I've kind of dove into this space of, coaching and like the most loving, caring people who do the biggest things in the world. I mean, tons of contribution, either of time or money. They're very selfish, and they take care of their needs first, and then they serve from their overflow. So Liz and I mean, if you ask her, I mean, we both have agreed that like the most important person for me to love is myself. And she'll say the same thing too. You know, like the most important person for me to love is herself. And it's a totally different way of relating. And at first it was pretty uncomfortable for me. But yeah, like I always make sure that I take care of my needs, and she always makes sure that she takes care of her needs. And we never make each other wrong. Like I never make her wrong for anything, and she never makes me wrong for anything, which has been so healing. Because I just for most of my life I thought I was like a broken piece of shit for most of my life because of the things that I did when I was a quote unquote like bad man or bad boy. Yeah. But in reality, I was just like, I was a kid in a ton of pain and in a ton of hurt, just doing the best that he could with a very, very limited skill set of relating to other humans and not a whole lot of support.
Yeah, no, I hear you loud and clear. And so, you know, just one more thing before we wrap up here, and then of course I want people to learn more about where they can get in touch with you in the School for Men, and definitely want to talk about that as well before we wrap. But you know, one more question here, which is, you know, I think that for most men, there is the fear of being vulnerable with other men, right?
Yeah.
And showing that degree of weakness. And you know, you talked about, you know, earlier sort of the different permutations of, you know, of violet and, you know, to the other end of the color spectrum. And so you know, it's kind of the same thing sort of on the homosexuality to, you know,
totally
to, you know, to the scale or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, on one end, you know, you're homosexual, on the other, in the middle, you're bisexual, on the other end, you know, you're just you know, you're completely like just opposite sex, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that, you know, very few people fall all the way at the end of the lines, and then there's, you know, probably somewhere in between for most of the world. And you know, as we begin to open up, as we begin to hug, as we begin to say I love you and these sort of things to other men, you know, the fear, of course, is that then it becomes, you're in sort of a sexual sort of way now, because we almost can't, the only time that we have those sort of feelings and emotions is with women. And of course, then the intent is to have a deeper relationship, all puns intended, know, with that woman. So how do you help men reconcile the fact that they're not gay, they're not going to be perceived as gay if that is an issue, you know, for them? Because, you know, I have a lot of friends who are gay. I love them to death. We tell each other we love each other. And, you know, in that relationship, it's fine. But with the heterosexual male relationship, it definitely seems to be, and there's a blockage there. You know, it's a societal obstacle that's been put in place for millennia. You know, how do you think men can overcome that or introduce that into their relationship with other men without, you know, being ostracized?
Yeah. So, there's a lot there, and that's a great question. And there's a lot to unpack.
Okay. So just give it to me in a minute.
Yeah, cool. So everything in my life is like, just tell the fucking truth. So if you had a friend, you know, that you were worried, just say all of that. You know, I'd be like, man, Steve, like I just really love and admire you as, like, you know, who you are and your business and your family, and just like, I fucking love you. And even as I say that, like, I feel kind of weird and I feel like I'm gay, but like, I don't give a fuck, man. Like, I just, like, I love you and who you are. It's just, it's just tell the truth. And, there's so much power in just telling the truth of what you admire about someone or what you appreciate about them. And it just creates this, like, just really deep connection. So just tell the truth. Just tell the truth to your guy friends, and your relationships will blossom like nothing ever before. And try and try and get some more touch. So as boys, we're so starved for touch, which is, God, I love touch. It's so healing. Like I'm pretty touchy. Like I'll put my hands on like friends, you know, men, women. I give lots of hugs, and I used to not be. And I, you know, North County, San Diego is a pretty huggy, touchy place. But, you know, it's okay for, you know, girls in class to comb each other's hair or to braid their hair or to do something. But as boys from a very, you know, young age, you know, it's like, you don't even, there's no like holding hands or like putting your arm around someone. There's none of that. And so I think a lot of men are just sort of starved for touch, and the only touch that we get, a lot of us, is during sex. So there's like an anchor or there's a connection that when I get touched, I'm going to get a boner. Or like when I get touched, you know, it's like I'll feel my like loins, like I'll feel that, like I'll feel my, the energy down there get activated, because that's the only time, like the only time that I have touch is during sex, you know? Mm-hmm. So guys, when they get massages or any kind of body work, like they'll have an erection, and then they're like, oh no, like a dude is giving me a massage. Like, am I gay? Just, you know, all sorts of stuff. But, it's really because, you know, the only time that we have touch is when we're like having sex. So yeah, just try and, I don't know, just try and find ways to get like a lot of touch. Like I sit with my arm around my friends a lot, like even guy friends, girlfriends, and I'm, you know, it's like I, like in this moment, like I've never had any like sexual experience with a man. You know, they've all been with women. But yeah, there's so much love that I get to receive now from the world because I am open to it. Yeah. And I mean, growing up in a like a really strict Christian religion where like homosexuality was a sin, you know, so anything even remotely gay, like I was like, I had this almost visceral reaction in my body. Like when I, the first time I went to a gay club, I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Like dudes are making out. I mean, I was just afraid and everything, but you know, now it's just so normal. Like I just feel so comfortable with all sorts of people. And because of that, my experience of life is better. Like I can go anywhere, pretty much any like socioeconomic, like I can hang out at Awesomest Fest, and I can hang out like in the hood. I can hang out with gay people, black people. I mean, any group of people, and just truly feel really comfortable. But that's because I, instead of judging like I did for most of my life, like I just started diving in head first, to the people and to the experiences that like I had the most judgment or felt kind of the most weird around, and just, hey dude, like, can you tell me about your life? I mean, I've sat down with, you know, this different gay friends, or I've tackled on like racism with some like black friends, and just, hey, just, can you give me some more insight on like what it's like to like just be you. And I've gotten just such a deeper learning of life and just all the different human experiences that we all have. And I think it helps me be a better coach and a better man. And even for like my own selfish purpose, like I feel comfortable. Like I never feel uncomfortable anymore in any room. And I did extremely uncomfortable, extreme social anxiety, growing up when I was young. And now I don't, but I had to just have a shit ton of like courageous conversations with people in order to get there. And I'm not done. Like I'm still having more, you know, courageous conversations. I'm still diving into, you know, things that scare me. But because of that, life is just getting more and more fulfilling and easier, and, you know, just kind of feels like everything's kind of going downhill instead of, like, I felt like Sisyphus, like pushing that boulder uphill for most of my life. And yeah,
it just keeps getting easier the more you do it. So yeah, you know, a lot totally. Of it just has to do with practice. So, you know, briefly here, I just want to give you an opportunity to talk about the School for Men, which I know you're going to be launching here fairly soon. So just in a nutshell, what is the School for Men?
Yeah, so the School for Men, it's a global community of men who are dedicated to mastering the game of life. So it's really everything. It's a space to talk, kind of have these kind of conversations around sexuality or around money and around relationship. It is a sort of an offering for men that gives them all three of the big C's that I kind of came up with this model. It just kind of came to me in my head, because when I look at my growth and what helps for like lasting change, I think there's like three C's. One is content. I'm distilling just the best of what I've learned from studying with, you know, some of the world's greatest teachers and sexuality and spirituality and entrepreneurship, and just putting it into this 12-week curriculum. So it's content. It's commitment. There's a lot of content in the world right now. Everything you need to know is out there for free on podcasts like Reinvention Radio. Tim Ferriss has a podcast. YouTube, you can learn anything on YouTube, but a lot of people are still stuck in these lives because they don't have the commitment. So it's like I'm giving men an opportunity to make a commitment in themselves, like, you know, through a financial investment. And then the big multiplier, so there's content, there's commitment, and then there's community. And for me, that has been the game changer in my growth, is finding a like men who are also on this path of growth. And so the School for Men, it's for the first school, like, we're only going to have 100 spots, and it's by application only. It's going to be 100 guys who are all on the same path, and I just know it's going to be just so good for every man involved, including myself, to like have this like access to just all these badass dudes from all over the world. So I couldn't do anything without the love and help and support of other people who are also on this path. Those are my like three C's. It's like content, commitment, and community. And that's what I'm, you know, that's what I packaged up for men, because I just truly think that like that's what a lot of guys need the most on their journey.
Sweet. And then also people can obviously check out your personal site at
Hrostovsky.com.
Yeah, but it's I want to spell it for folks. So it's H-R-O-S like Sam, T like Tom, O-S like Sam, K-I. So Hrostovsky.com, Hrostovsky.com. So, Mike, really appreciate you being on the show, man. Love the work that you're doing. Love the impact that you're having on men all over the planet, including me. And again, I applaud you, man. I'm so glad you took the time out to join us here on Reinvention Radio.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Thanks for even sharing your piece. I shared some stuff that I never shared, right? And there's a deeper, I love you more because of that. And they're like, we have a deeper connection. Thanks for some really tough questions. And it was good. It was rich for me too. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, my brother. All right, we'll talk soon.
All right, thank you.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsher, visit reinventionradio.com.